So last week, we have finished up the history relating to Abraham and shifted our gear towards the history of next generation of Isaac and Jacob. And as we have emphasized last week, in order to correctly understand the stories in the Bible, we must truly know who God actually is and fully understand how God works in our lives. Above all, we must remember that God respects our traits of free will, as this is something He has given to us as part of His creation. Because of this free will, we must recall that He doesn't predestine or has already pre-chosen the outcome of our lives. Rather, He respects our free will by blessing those who voluntarily and faithfully react to His calling. Therefore, the correct understanding of the stories in the Bible is only possible when we are aware and conscious of this fundamental process that God uses. In applying this process, we have examined that God used and blessed Isaac because Isaac voluntarily reacted to God's calling. And it wasn't because of the benefit that Isaac has received for merely being the son of Abraham. In the end, Isaac was able to enjoy the promise that God has made to Abraham because he reacted to God's calling by being faithful and by obeying to God's commands. So today we'll continue to look at the stories of Isaac and also Jacob and Esau to further develop the idea that we have shared last week. So many people tend to read the stories of Isaac and Jacob as a story of blessings. I mean, we have a shallow understanding of these stories by thinking that God will bless our next generation, just like how Isaac was blessed because of his father Abraham. That's a very big misunderstanding. We must remember that these stories are trying to tell us how God is working and how God's promise and dreams are being implemented in some particular person's life, in our lives. And God's revealing that through the story of Isaac, the story of Abraham, and story of Jacob. So we just have to remember that this story is not just about blessings. So if we look at chapter 26, we can see that Isaac's life isn't aligned with Abraham's life. I mean, they have lived a very similar life. As it was mentioned last week, we're going to continue to see the story of Isaac in chapter 27, but he comes out as a character in Jacob's story. Therefore, we can assume that chapter 27 is talking about the story and the history of Jacob. So Isaac's life is just briefly mentioned in chapter 26, but we can see that Jacob's story extends all the way to chapter 36. Which involves a very long and complex storyline. Firstly, due to his deceitful conduct against his brother Esau, Jacob runs away from his home to his parents' hometown, Haran. During the 20 years of living in Haran, he has 4 wives and 12 children. The gist of the story is that at one point, his children fight among each other due to the favoritism that Jacob has shown to Joseph, which leads to his jealous brother to sell Joseph as a slave to Egypt. And we all know that Jacob is able to meet his son Joseph again in Egypt, where later he dies. But from this story, we can see that because he left his home for what he has done to his brother Esau, his storyline gets very complicated. The main point of learning about Jacob's life today through this sermon is that Jacob's life is very analogous to our lives. So by looking at the story of Jacob and by comparing with our life story, we're able to gain knowledge and wisdom of what God's promise is and what it actually means to live a faithful life. So through these stories, let's ask God for the wisdom and knowledge. So we mentioned before that as we live in this world, we develop the relationship between humans, materials, and God. I mean, it is inevitable that until we go to heaven, we cannot separate ourselves from these relationships. These relationships are given by God because we need them in this world. Therefore, if we ignore any of these relationships, then it is very difficult for us to live a normal life. I mean, don't we all agree that it is a problem if we don't have materialistic things such as a house or money? And it becomes more problematic if our relationship with other people breaks down. Above all, if our relationship breaks down with God, then it becomes an absolute disaster. I mean, therefore, we need to establish a proper priority of these relationships. As we live each and every day, we're able to distinguish whether we are a mature or immature Christians by looking at how we prioritize these relationships. If we are a mature Christian, then we're able to live a life that reacts to God's calling by acting in a faithful manner towards His promise. However, if we are immature, then it is likely that our priority will be very different. We might prioritize money or a house or a car as first on our list before a relationship with God. So we must try, as always, to try to prioritize these relationships in order to distinguish ourselves as mature Christians. So now let's look at our prime example of mature Christian who was able to prioritize properly of these three relationships. I mean, Abraham was able to put his relationship with God before his relationship with other people. We can see this from the fact that he part ways with his cousin Lot. And this argument is further supported by looking at how he drives out Ishmael. Because of Abraham's determination to put his relationship with God on top of the hierarchy, we're able to see that God ultimately favors Abraham by calling him as his friend and companion. Another prime example is with Isaac. On his way to Egypt to avoid famine, Isaac was able to react faithfully when God surprisingly called him to stop his journey to Egypt. I mean, he was able to stay in the promised land of Canaan, and he avoided quarrels against Philistines who tried to take away their wells, of Isaac's wells that him and his men had dug up. Ultimately, we can see that he was able to keep his path straight with materialistic or human relationships by avoiding quarrels and keeping peace until the king of Philistines came before him to make a peace treaty with him. Furthermore, in regards to the birthright of his sons, he wasn't trying to do much by himself. He wasn't stubborn with his own thoughts, but he obeyed God's foresight. So those two prime examples are something that we should meditate on as we live each and every day, because it could be a good example for us as we try to find out how to prioritize our relationships as we live each and every day. So the bottom line is that when we properly prioritize these three relationships in our lives, we're able to witness how joyful it is to live a faithful life. Our lives become incomparable. It's just endless joy. No matter what obstacles or hardships gets in our way, we're able to be still because we know the truth of God. Nothing could shake us. That is why it is so imperative to receive a proper education on this matter of prioritizing. If he or she is able to do this at a young age, able to get this kind of education at this young age, then that young follower will be able to make a huge spiritual impact in this society and has the potential to become an exemplary figure like David or Daniel. On the opposite side of the spectrum, if we're not able to properly prioritize these relationships, as we get older and older, then we're in danger of living a rough or stormy life. I mean, this is dangerous to the person himself or herself and those around that person. It can have negative consequences or influences on those around that person. So let's really prioritize all three relationships as soon as possible. Younger the better. So that we may be able to live a second faster as an influential Christians who can impact, who can have an impact in this society. So if you're wondering at this point, how can I prioritize these relationships in my life? Just follow the sermons from previous weeks and also from today. And the stories of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob will reveal to you how they managed to prioritize these three relationships in their lives. And we can learn from that. And we can learn from that and meditate on that. And we can apply them in our lives. So moving on, in order to continue, to understand these stories correctly, you must be able to estimate the time frame of when certain history is happening. So to give you a brief history, chapter 26 that we have looked at last week has 30 to 40 year gap between chapter 27. I mean, isn't that amazing? Just a chapter apart and there's 30 to 40 year gap, or 30 to 40 year history within that chapter. And Isaac marries Rebekah at age 40 and has his twin sons at age 60. And Abraham passes away at age 175. At the time, Isaac was 75 years old and Esau and Jacob were 15. So we can know that Isaac has already spent 50 years with his sons. And at age somewhere between 20 and 30, Esau sells his birthright as a first son to Jacob for a bowl of lentil soup, which then leaves Esau to many women, which then leads Esau to marry a woman from Hivite. So after 37 years of history, we're now on chapter 27. So let's examine how Isaac and Rebekah and Esau and Jacob have lived in their during this time. It is likely that Isaac and Rebekah lived a faithful life and carried on Abraham's legacy of God's promise because they voluntarily reacted and came before God when God called them. On the other hand, Esau marries a woman from Hivite, which shows that he didn't live faithfully to God's promise, but rather lived for his own sake and pleasure. And lastly, Jacob is not the main character who carried on God's promise, but nevertheless, he believed in God's promise and lived faithfully. So we know that while Esau was marrying a woman from Kenite, Jacob didn't even associate with woman from Kenite. This shows that he was being faithful to God. If we don't know this time frame between chapter 26 and 27, that 30 to 40 years, 20 to 30 years, then we can make a silly mistake by interpreting that Isaac and Rebekah took sides of each son. So Isaac favored Esau and Rebekah favored Jacob. And that they probably had a dysfunctional family. However, this is an incorrect interpretation. So if we have this background knowledge, the history knowledge of these chapters, then we can avoid some major misinterpretations. So again, it is important to know here that because of possibility of misinterpreting these stories, we need to have a correct understanding of the time frame in between each event. On the other hand, if we treat each story as an independent story and not able to connect them together, then we can run into another problem by treating these stories as mere blessing message, a message of blessing, when this message is really about a message of salvation. So we can see from modern sermons that many pastors and many churches, they tend to frame these stories as how to receive God's blessing. Even worse, they sometimes give a title of the sermon as a chosen and predestined ones and explain that our lives are fully planned out already by some higher power. And if we truly know the history of these stories, then it'd be a very wild assumption to think that these messages are only about blessing. So again, just to emphasize, it's really about the message of salvation. And if we have that in back of our minds when we meditate on these stories, then we're able to truly see that this message is indeed about salvation and the promise that God has made to Abraham. So, however, as this was mentioned many times before, the story of these characters are in the Bible are showing us how God has changed our course from going to hell due to our corrupt nature of misusing our free will into the course of heaven. Basically, these stories tell us how God is using his people to fulfill his kingdom. And without these stories, we're pretty much dumbfounded in this world. And we'll be putting too much emphasis on how to receive God's blessing instead of thinking about how to live a faithful life by reacting to his calling. So our focus should not be about just blessings. I mean, God's blessings is definitely important, and we need to definitely ask for his blessings. But when we read these stories, that's not the that shouldn't be the end point. The end point should be how to receive that salvation, thinking about how to live a faithful life that Abraham has lived, how Rebecca has lived, how Jacob has lived, and how they reacted to God's calling. So as we start to examine chapter 27, let's remember everything that happened in previous chapters. And most importantly, recall that God respects our free wills and doesn't predestine every little thing in our lives. Let's also particularly keep in mind that things that are happening in chapter 27 is when Jacob and Esau are in their late 70s, 77 to be precise. So chapter 27 is a famous story of Jacob deceiving his father Isaac in order to receive Isaac's blessing instead of Esau. The basic story is that Isaac was on the verge of facing the last phase of his life. I mean, becoming blind towards the late stage of your life is a crucial indicator that your time is almost up. It seems like Isaac certainly realized that here. Therefore, he was desperate to pass his blessing to his eldest son, Esau, so that his son can carry on his legacy by passing on to him all the responsibility and being a new leader in the family. So Isaac asked his son to gather his weapons and hunt him some wild game for him, basically asking him to prepare a tasty food that Isaac enjoys eating. And in return, Isaac will give his blessing to Esau. Now, Rebekah was listening as Isaac spoke to his son Esau. She then quickly told Jacob to prepare some tasty food for Isaac so that Isaac may bless him, Jacob, instead of Esau. I mean, what a mother. Now, this is a good point to ask this question. Rebekah was the mother of both sons. She was a mother of Jacob and Esau. But why did she want Jacob to receive Isaac's blessing instead of Esau? Is it because she favors and loves Jacob more? I mean, it's because the answer to this question is because Rebekah realized that Esau had no faith in God and he wasn't willing to uphold his family's tradition, which was to live a faithful life. So don't think that Rebekah hated her son Esau, but rather she was trying to protect her family's future. She knew that if Esau becomes a leader of the family, then it was highly likely that Esau will lead the family into an opposite path of God. He will lead the family away from God's promise. As a result, even though Jacob seemed lacking and unfitting to be the leader of the family, Rebekah still wanted Jacob to lead the family because he was willing to live a faithful life and knew that he would direct his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is just and right. So as mentioned earlier, the end of chapter 26 mentions that Esau marries not just one, not just two, or actually it's two, two women from Hittite at age 40, which were a source of great grief to his parents. We know that there is something profoundly wrong with this, because usually parents bless their children in their marriage. But this was clearly not the case for Esau's marriage. So Isaac and Rebekah were not supportive of this wedding. Not because they merely didn't like their daughter-in-law, but rather because the daughter-in-law were from a family or place that lived a completely different life from what God wanted. Their goals and objectives, which were heavily devoted to earthly and materialistic desires, were very different from the God's objectives and goals. That's why they just couldn't bless their children's wedding or their child's wedding. So we all know that Jewish people are notorious for educating their children. It is interesting then to see how Esau could grow up as such a dispassionate Christian, even though he probably received long and quality education from his mother. We can see that Esau had no interest in God. By just looking at the lentil soup incident. So we can sort of predict that Rebekah was suffering from this dilemma, but ultimately decided to choose Jacob over Esau because she firmly believed that Jacob was the man to lead his family, or her family, and to fulfill Abraham's promise. So Rebekah made a huge commitment to come all the way to the land of Canaan from Haran because Abraham couldn't leave the land of Canaan. And it is pretty evident that Rebekah clearly knew the covenant that God has made with Abraham. And she was willing to be part of Abraham's life to go on a journey that shows how faithful they are to God. So going beyond Abraham's faith, Rebekah personally knew and heard God and voluntarily believed in God. Therefore, she wanted to walk on the righteous path with her father-in-law and her husband. In other words, the purpose of this marriage was not just for the sake of marriage itself, but it was about pursuing the faithful life with her husband. We can see that God doesn't favor men over women, or the stories in the Bible don't revolve around the story of men. There's so many stories of women in the Bible who voluntarily believed in God and successfully lived a faithful life. And Rebekah is a prime example of that. So again, Rebekah put God as a centerpiece in her life. That's why she probably tried really hard to educate her children so that they may live a faithful life as well. Since she knew the importance of putting God first and living a faithful life, she was willing to sacrifice her life by willing to take the risk of being cursed for actions by helping Jacob in deceiving Isaac to grant him with the blessings. She couldn't just sit around and wait for Isaac to bless Esau because she knew that he would bring problems. Esau will bring problems in the future for the family as he was not faithful to God and he only cared about the earthly life. So do you guys understand what Rebekah went through? She couldn't sit around. She had to do something about it. And she was willing to risk everything, even her life, in order for her family, for her generations to come, to stay faithful to God, to live under the promise of Abraham. Therefore, we shouldn't treat Rebekah as a selfish woman who favored one son over the other son. To think that would be a big misunderstanding and would be ignoring the background history. So now imagine putting yourself in Rebekah's shoes. What would you have done? It's something to deeply meditate about. So moving on, the Bible discloses all the wrongs and rights caused by the people. It doesn't reveal just the good things. It also reveals immature actions by humans. We can see that Rebekah and Abraham both show human weaknesses through their actions and decisions. So we can analogize Rebekah's actions with Abraham's actions. We call that Abraham had his son Ishmael through his servant Hagar. This cannot be considered as the most mature conduct by Abraham. Similarly, Rebekah was only trying to live a faithful life, but her actions were nevertheless not mature. So you might ask, are their actions necessarily a bad thing? Because they have done it with good intention. As we all could see, Abraham had good intention and Rebekah had good intention for her actions. The good intention being faithful to God. Nonetheless, we can see that their actions have brought about unintended consequences. Just like how Abraham's decision to have Ishmael through Hagar has brought about difficulties in his and Sarah's lives throughout the history, Rebekah's abrupt action has caused Jacob to run away from his homeland and brought about difficulties in Jacob's life. So these consequences are inevitable. It would happen if we, even though we might have a good intention, if our actions are not mature, if our actions are wrong, then it's possible that consequences can occur later on. Therefore, we must be aware that our actions with good intention can still lead to an inevitable harsh consequences in our lives if the method is dodgy or just plainly wrong. And we often tell ourselves that we're living in this world in a faithful manner, but sometimes we make mistakes that tend to haunt us in our lives and sometimes even carry on to the next generation. And therefore, we must remember this point. Just remember that point and try to see if in our lives we have acted like Esau, who sold his birthright for a lentil soup. Nonetheless, this can be categorized as fate as well. We have to recognize that we're weak and we can't not ever be perfect. Therefore, we're very vulnerable in making mistakes in our lives. But the important aspect to this is that God doesn't disown us, but rather He makes our mistakes as our stepping stone. That is why it is so crucial for us to stay faithful to God in this complicated world that we have created. Therefore, don't be despaired by your mistakes, but rather learn from your mistakes and keep your faith locked in. But above all, let's always remember that our decision and choices that we make at this time, at the present time, will definitely lead to consequences that we cannot rewind. Just like how Abraham's decision to have a son through his servant, or just like how Rebekah's decision to deceive his husband and her husband and her son Esau by telling Jacob to pretend that he's Esau. And those consequences definitely bring, those actions definitely bring bad consequences later in our lives. So let's just ask God for wisdom and knowledge so that we may not make these kind of mistakes in our lives anymore. And just ask Him how to live faithfully, what kind of actions that we need to take each and every day. We can see that Jacob's reaction when Rebekah makes the proposal to him. He was scared and feared that he might be caught by his dad. However, it seems like Rebekah's education on Jacob has paid off. because he ultimately obeys to his mother's commands. Do note that it is difficult to interpret Jacob's actions as a mere mama's boy type of thing, because his age was 77 at the time. He was capable of making his own decisions. A better interpretation would be that he accepted his mother's proposal because he saw how his parents were aggrieved by Esau's immature actions. So we're able to assume that when his mother made a risky and huge commitment, he as well partook on this risky move, but probably willing to take full responsibility for the possible consequences to come. In conclusion, both Rebecca and Jacob had the kind of faith that basically showed that they were willing to die in order to uphold their faith. And this is something to take away from these stories, and we must apply them in our lives. So there are two takeaway points to Rebecca's story here. I'll just summarize it for you guys. First, we must do whatever it takes to uphold our faith as we live each and every day. We must know how valuable it is to maintain our faith. Therefore, Rebecca's heart and willingness to risk her life to uphold her faith is noteworthy. Second, we must realize that Rebecca's method in keeping her faith is questionable. And therefore, we must ask God for wisdom as we try to uphold our faith. We must strive for a better way. For example, Rebecca could have perhaps tried to persuade Isaac to bless Jacob instead of Esau for the reasons that she had. I mean, this was not entirely impossible, because we have documents from back then that tells us that the father was allowed to bless any of his sons. It didn't necessarily have to be the eldest son. So this was definitely a better approach that Rebecca could have taken, and it wouldn't have resulted in unintended consequences in the future for Jacob. As we reflect our lives, how many times have we used a wrong method? I mean, we tell ourselves that we're going to live a faithful life, but just how many times have we made mistakes like Abraham, Isaac, and Rebecca? Just how many times have we tried to do something with our lacking human knowledge when the intention was to live a faithful and holy life? So let's remember that upholding the faith is very important, but the method that we use to uphold that faith is just as important. Throughout the week, as we meditate today's sermon, it will be worthwhile to think about our methods. If we look at the big picture, we can see that Abraham's decision to send his servant to find his daughter-in-law was just an outstanding choice. Even though it wasn't easy to find Rebecca, as the servant traveled very far to find her, and especially because it was difficult to find someone who wasn't influenced by the culture of earthly idols, it was still definitely worth the trouble. This is pretty obvious from seeing how Rebecca was able to see things clearly when Isaac wasn't able to make a sharp decision as he lost his eyesight. She was able to make a better decision than Isaac. In other words, she was able to make a decision on behalf of Isaac. So we can see that this is pretty important. It is pretty important to marry a woman or man who has faith in God. When we marry a faithful partner, then we are able to witness a great synergy which can lead the family into God's path. However, if we marry an unfaithful partner, like how Esau did, then there is a great risk of destroying the entire family. For those of you who are married, since you guys have already formed as one community, it is important to collaborate together in order to uphold the faith, just like how Rebecca did with Isaac. And if you're on the verge of marrying in the future, really pray to God that you will be able to marry someone who's faithful to God, who's voluntarily faithful to God, like how Rebecca was voluntarily faithful to God. not because of Isaac or not because of his or her father-in-law Abraham, but because she voluntarily was faithful to God. So from chapter 27, we can see that Jacob's action had brought about a great turmoil into the family. As Esau found out that his brother has taken away his blessings, he went to Isaac to ask for his blessings. However, Isaac expressed that there is nothing that he could do anymore. You might be thinking, why couldn't Isaac just cancel the blessing that he has given to Jacob and just grant a new blessing to Esau? I mean, it's not a big deal, right? It's not like a official paperwork that went through. It was just a blessing with Isaac's mouth. So we might be thinking, why couldn't he just cancel it and just grant a new blessing? And that's a very legitimate question. But if you look at the annotation of Hochma, we can predict that Isaac couldn't really cancel his previous blessing to Jacob and grant a new blessing to Esau, because it wasn't a simple matter. It wasn't a simple matter as it seemed to be. It was part of the tradition back then that there was power to these blessings, and as they were considered to be a valid thing. Furthermore, Isaac blessed Jacob in God's name. His faith can be witnessed here again, because he believed that he was not allowed to bless in God's name in any desire that he wishes. God's name wasn't something that he could just pull out from his pocket and just use it. It wasn't like that. And he respected that, and that showed Isaac's faith. And therefore, it was unfortunate, but Isaac couldn't really undo the blessing. So as we can see from chapter 26, verse 35, Isaac too was very thoughtful about Esau and Esau's lifestyle. I mean, Isaac obviously didn't think that Esau was the best son. Isaac believed that his son was not fit to carry the God's promise. Nevertheless, he tried to bless Esau, who didn't have any interest in God at age 77, because Isaac had this human expectation that Esau would get better in the future. I mean, don't we do that sometimes to our children? We expect better of them in the future, but the reality is, if your son is already 40 years old, he's not going to change. It's very unlikely for him to change. And it's a very natural thing for humans to go through, for fathers and mothers to go through. And that tends to cause a lot of problems. I mean, there is no question as to Isaac's faith for God here. However, just because he lost his eyesight, he cannot just merely use his expectations to bless anyone to carry on the God's promise. When Isaac realized that he had blessed the wrong son, he trembled violently. He probably realized the importance of keeping God's promise, as his father Abraham tried so hard in keeping it during his time. So again, we can see that Isaac was a true follower who voluntarily on his own tried to walk on the faithful path. His faith was not a mere reflection of his father's faith. Isaac here had to make a very tough and difficult decision not to bless Esau again after Jacob. Isaac put a greater weight on his relationship with God. Therefore, just like how Abraham made a tough decision to drive out Ishmael, Isaac too had to make a difficult decision not to bless his older son Esau. To wrap this point up, it seemed like Esau believed that it was part of God's will to bless the eldest son. It is very likely that Isaac was trying to bless Esau in good faith. I mean, he had all the good intention, even though Esau had no interest in God. However, when he found out that Jacob and Rebekah had deceived him, instead of criticizing them, he realized the truth of God's heart. I mean, this point is further supported in chapter 28. Isaac called for Jacob and blessed him and commanded him, "Do not marry a Canaanite woman." And he commands him to marry a woman from Haran, just like how Isaac had married Rebekah. So at the end, we can see that God's covenant made with Abraham continues down the family line as Jacob receives Isaac's blessing. I mean, the blessing could have been discontinued if the blessing was passed down to Esau instead of Jacob. So we know that just because Abraham is the father of all of us, just because he was the iconic figure of a true follower, and just because you're son of Abraham, didn't mean that the faithful life, the promised life, will not continue down to generation to generation. The fact that Isaac had voluntarily lived a faithful life, and the fact that Jacob, after Isaac, had voluntarily lived a faithful life, is what's important here. So we can see from chapter 28 that Esau had realized that his parents didn't like his wife from Kenia. He finally realizes this. So he looks for a new wife. How foolish of him. However, he doesn't try to look for one in his mother's hometown. Instead, he marries the daughter of Ishmael that Abraham had apparently drove out from their land. I mean, Ishmael, we have to know that Ishmael was kicked out by Abraham because they didn't have the faith. They weren't trying to live a faithful life. But just because Esau's parents didn't like a woman from Kenia, he just decides to marry one of his cousin's family. So we can really see here again that the foolishness of Esau and how he really, really, really had no interest in God. If he realized God's truth and had faith in God, then he would have chosen a wife with faith, like a woman from his mother's hometown. But he acts foolishly by marrying any woman who wasn't a Canaanite. Basically, he missed the whole point of why his parents was not pleased with his previous wives. So again, the question shoots back at us. What kind of lives are we living? Are we just trying to avoid the bad things, avoid not committing one of the Ten Commandments or not going against one of the Ten Commandments? It shouldn't be like that. We need to look deeper. We need to see a bigger picture here. And living a faithful life is not just avoiding the thing that we're told not to do. It's about voluntarily reacting to God's calling and voluntarily coming out to God and say, I need your wisdom and knowledge to live faithfully and to really know the methods of how to come closer to God. That is why it's so important to marry a woman like Sarah and Rebecca, who fear God and try so hard to fulfill God's promise by living a faithful life. The same can be applied when choosing a husband. So the conclusion of Esau's story is brought about by his spiritual indifference. Let us not be fooled by the formalities as we try to live faithfully. God really hates those who only pretend to be a Christian on the outside. In Isaiah chapter 1, we can see how Jesus condemns the Pharisees by saying, "Stop bringing meaningless offerings. Your incense is detestable to me." He says, stop bringing meaningless offerings. Therefore, the story of Esau and Jacob is God's message for us on what kind of faithful life that he wants us to live. Just like how we don't want each other to treat each other based on formalities with no genuine heart or intention, it is clear that God doesn't want us to live like Esau. He wants us to genuinely live a faithful life. So we heard the expression, Sunday Christians. We cannot be Sunday Christians. But we need to come to church every Sunday, believing that God will talk to us and God will bless us. And we need to come before Him with a genuine heart and that kind of faithfulness. So we will continue the story next week.